I'll tell you what. I don't understand why people, why anybody would not use InSale.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Actually. I can always tell when you've switched to record mode.
How? How could you tell?
I don't know. You get into a subject of conversation that
wouldn't normally come up.
Yeah, or came up inorganically, maybe. Okay. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, InSale is the way.
It just is. I mean,
It's not. I'm not going to say it's perfect. I think there's a lot of ways it could be more user friendly.
No result systems that are completely perfect. But the thing with InSale is that, you know, Doc and, you know, Mateo, all those guys, they have been to every possible permutation of an archery event and basically made adjustments or modules that'll work for all of it.
Yeah. I think if you have no idea, if you've never seen it before and you're trying to understand what's happening or how to find a score, it might be kind of difficult. But once you get the hang of it.
Not as some of the other stuff out there. The system that's being used by USA Archery, for example, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but it's just not good.
I don't think it's good. I do think it's easier for a first-time user, though.
Here's where we agree to disagree. Hi, I'm George Tekmachev here with Anderson.
Big Cat. Oh, yeah, that's right. I go by Anderson now. That's, yeah. If anyone comes and calls me that, I'm probably going to have words for them. I'm not going to be nice about
it. Hey, Anderson.
Yeah.
Well, last week you wanted to be called Anderson.
Yeah, but, you know, then sometimes people will, I don't know, they'll come and make the joke. I don't know.
Our friend Marcus in Australia thought it was a great idea.
All right, well, fine. If Marcus is in on it, then I'm fine with it.
All right. Well, we're just back real quick to catch up on, we just had a nice conversation with our buddy Dean Alberga, who's 3 hours back from Shanghai as we record. The World Cup first stage is over. And while I'm personally still not quite feeling that World Cup excitement, it was a heck of an event for the people that went and participated. And Steve, I'm going to say it right now. India is becoming the Korea of compound archery.
Yeah, they did good. They did pretty good. You know, they won a lot of the team stuff. Jyothi held it down in the women's side.
Yeah, she was on our short list as a finalist.
They're a lot like the USA was about 10 years ago.
And you'll remember, if you listened to the last one, we did say, hey, Nico is there. Nico could do well. Well, Nico did better than just well.
I don't remember what we said, but yeah, I think you brought him up.
Nico Wiener, the Austrian world champion.
Big 150 with 11X to win.
And he beat...
against the one named man.
The one named man. That's right.
That's why we got on that. Okay, yes. Now I remember.
Yeah. He beat Mr. Priyansh.
I'm just Anderson now.
Yeah, that's right.
Priyansh. Yeah. Priyansh got real far. I've never seen his name before.
Well, it's because he's got only one name.
Yeah, just one named man.
On the compound women, as you mentioned, Jyothi Sureka Venom of India, the winner over Andrea Becerra of Mexico.
Triple gold for her.
Really good. Really good.
I think she was surprised. She had some luck on her side in the gold medal final, but that's, I think we even said last time, it takes a little bit of luck to actually win one of these things.
Part of the game.
Yep.
Compound men's team, India, Mr. Fuj, Mr. Priyansh, and Abhi Verma. And they beat the Netherlands team of Sil Potter and Mike Schlusser and Steph Willems. And then the Koreans were defeated in the semifinals, so they ended up winning the bronze medal. For the compound women's team, again, India. And that's a powerful team that the Indian women have put together. Parneet Kaur, who's got a lot of experience, and then you got Aditi Swami, the world champion, and you've got Jyothi Venom.
Triple gold.
And they beat the Italian team of Irene Franchini and Elisa Rohner and Marcy Tonioli. So a really, really good event. Compound mixed team, India. India beating Estonia and USA taking third place for the mixed teams. On the recurve side, I think, you know, you're looking at the emergence of another great archer from Spain, Andres Temino. He defeated little Kim Jidok, while big Kim took the bronze.
Yeah, Spain's had a regular occurrence of competitive archers, so I think it's feeding on itself right now. You know, we You see that a lot when someone gets good, has some success. The teammates who train with that guy or compete with him regularly, they follow that. So it's good to see Spain kind of bearing the fruits of their labor there.
Sure. Lim Si-hyun of Korea took the gold, and she beat Deepika Kumari of India. Deepika back in international action after having for a while been kind of put on the wayside by the Indian Federation, but she is back. And then the home team with Li Jiaman of China taking the bronze medal there. The recurve men's team was a shocker, I think, for some people. India, again. And you got to look at that and go, okay, India has really started to bring it at the highest levels, even in recurve.
They're doing really well. Let's see if they can get some consistency on their recurve team. That's one of the problems they have, is it's always a different team every time.
That's exactly true. Yeah. Silver was Korea, and bronze went to Chinese Taipei, Taiwan.
Korea never wins gold. I mean, they do, but this is the Shanghai World Cup is often where they get upset. So, I mean, when Kazakhstan gave it to them there, you know, and you're like, who the heck is on that team, right? So,
right. For the recurve women, People's Republic of China's women's team won. They beat the Koreans.
Yeah, hometown. The Chinese women's recurve looked pretty strong all weekend, you know.
They did.
Again, another one where it's like, I don't see a ton of consistency in their team. Maybe I need to pay closer attention, but I also think, you know, they've got a lot of people who are contending for that team. So it probably, like India, probably shifts quite a bit.
And you've got bronze medal for Germany. Recurve mixed team was Korea, so at least that went their way.
Yeah, they got one there.
Spain was silver, and India was bronze. So, you know what? All in all, a very impressive piece of work from Team India overall. I you know, if you look at the total medal haul for India, it was by far the most of any of the countries.
Only six countries represented in all of the recurve medalists, if I'm not mistaken. Spain, Korea, India, China, Chinese Taipei, and Germany.
Yeah. If I'm on the U.S. team, I'm probably looking at this and going, I really need to, you know, maybe start ramping up a little bit now. But I don't know if it's such a great indicator. First off, you're 16 time zones away, and you only get there like the day before. It's not like you're going there to really set yourself up for the ultimate possible success. You know, they'll be getting out earlier to Paris, for example, and I think that'll help a lot. Sometimes that can help. So, yeah, India taking the most medals of any country, Korea second, and Spain right after that, then China and Austria with their single medal. We're looking at three total medals for the USA. You had a couple of bronzes and a team bronze medal. So maybe not such a bad haul for the USA.
Those are all compound.
Yeah, they were.
Weren't they? Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Yeah, they were. There was no USA.
There were no USAs in the finals. I suppose that, you know, this is just a warm-up. I mean, it's still early in the season. You know, we did talk about Arizona Cup being kind of the unofficial opening of the world season. If you're talking about the world level these days, you know, World Cup is certainly part of that element. So what else we got going on? We got Reading coming up. You and I did a little YouTube piece for Easton about Reading. I think that probably is going to be the most fun for a lot of people to start off the outdoor season. You know, of course, you have these events like Total Archery Challenge and some other stuff going on that are sort of mass participation events, but nothing seems to keep them coming back as often as Reading does over the years. So you're getting ready for that, right?
Yeah, we leave tomorrow.
So I think that you're looking at reasonable weather, maybe, based upon...
Yeah, it looks pretty good. There's mid-70s, no rain in the forecast as of right now, but that could all change.
Well, that's why you got to take your rain gear with you. That way you won't need it.
Yeah, got to pack it. Yeah. We packed it up. Nope, showing rain on Saturday, so...
Well, there you go.
It's okay.
Maybe you'll dodge it. I'll tell you, I just went through an event that was a rainy weekend, and I'll tell you that it was one of the more challenging things that I've had to do for a while. Dealing with the rain and dealing with that specific event was interesting. It was not easy, so I'll just leave it there. But if you can avoid the rain, I hope you can. I think you'll have more fun without it.
Yes.
All right, we're going to make this a short one. I can tell already. Where are we on the clock here?
What do we got? We got next week. Is it next week the final of the U.S. team trials for Olympics?
So, Gator Cup is going to be the a pair of events, I think, before Gator Cup that are going to actually decide the status of the final team slots. Now, our U.S. women's team has got their slots for Paris. Our men's team only has one slot right now. That was earned by Brady. But Brady does not own it technically. He still has to shoot. By my calculations, he's got to shoot at least one more round robin to be a total lock on that slot.
Yeah, I wish I knew how many points were still available, but Brady has a 30-point lead.
He had a 30-point advantage after Arizona Cup, and I think that it's practically insurmountable.
Yeah, right? If we look at stages 3 and 4, which I think occurred at Arizona Cup, Brady earned 52 points at those. The lowest earner had 23.5, by my math. Yeah, so they had a 28.5-point spread. Is that the math there? Yeah,
I think you're right. Yeah.
So if he becomes the lowest earner of points and the closest guy to him becomes the highest earner of points and it plays out the same way that it did there, he should be safe. I don't see Brady being the lowest point scorer at the next stage of trials.
He's just got to win a couple of passes.
Yeah, he does a little bit and it's over and done. Yeah. So that's
now,
interesting.
You know, obviously the scramble will be for second and third and hope that we have the opportunity to send second and third, because it's going to come down to the final team FQT, the final qualifying tournament.
Yeah, 2, 3, and 4 are real close. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 5, 6, 7, and 8 are not that far off either.
So Trenton's in there. Jack is in there. We've got Jackson in there. After that, it's not a huge separation, but it's something of a separation. A little more different with the women, if I recall correctly. I haven't looked at these numbers lately, but
third
basically
to fourth
there's
is,
four women that are, you know, really there, in contention here.
You could say, third has 58 points, fourth has 47.5, fifth has 45, sixth has 43.5, then it's 41, 38.5. So basically... Yeah, 3 or 4 are within 15 points of third. Sorry, down to sixth place. You're within 15 points of third. A big separation at this event would be, let's look, like Casey had 48 points at the last two stages of trials, mm-hmm. and let's take fifth place, sixth place. That girl had 25. So, yeah, you're probably not going to make up 15 points, but it's in theory possible. My guess is if you're, 5, 6 points behind, it's very doable. Someone could fall on their face and you could jump them easily, but...
No, mentioned lightning is a thing at Gator Cup. I mean...
Yeah. So, yeah, I think right now the women's race is... It's more separated, but still within reach for a lot of them.
Sure. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I can't imagine a scenario where they don't... Where the USA Archery folks don't send the actual, at least men who, qualify for the team to try to win that slot at the FQT. Why would you send anyone else?
Yeah, you're going to...
There's an injury or something,
Yeah, the rule was always that the top three who qualified were the ones who went. So when they had it last, that I recall...
Well, there won't be anybody more motivated to try to win
right.
that thing, you know?
Yeah, 2016, they had the team going and they had one individual qualified, and the three that went were the three that qualified for the team. So, and then they failed spectacularly. but I won't go into the why.
Yeah, we know the why.
Yeah.
We,
there was
we need to go there, but
there's always the question too. Like there was another team that they were in a similar position. They had one guy who was qualified and he was going. He knew he was going. And he shot insanely bad at the FQT and pretended he was really upset about it. And I'm like, I don't think he's upset. I think he wanted to be the one guy.
That's just
weird. It's really interesting. Because
why would
to me.
You give up a chance for another medal, you know, as a team?
Because right? you're dumb. Or you prefer individual glory, or you're not even thinking about the possibility of meddling. What you're thinking about is, you know, potential endorsement on the front side of that, you know,
yeah, just
what you can get out of it by being the only Olympic archer from your country. It just so
does not seem right.
It's pretty short-sighted, and but I'm not surprised by it either. People are terrible, and they're the worst.
By the way, you know, in our last podcast, we talked about some of the great scores being shot by the compounds, but the recurves hadn't shot by that point. Just looking back, some of the recurve scores were really quite good. I mean, Kim Woo-jin came within a point of his legendary 700 that he had shot back in Rio in 2016 with a 699. The world record still holding at 702, held by Brady Ellison. But then you had... you know, Matias Grande from Mexico with a 695. Dhiraj Bommadevara of India with a 693. I mean, these are crushing.
I always love when it's an Olympic year because if they get some decent conditions, like 680 is no longer good, right? In a normal year outside the Olympics, like next year, there will be like two or three guys over 680. And, you know, that'll be about it. And then you hit the Olympic year and all of a sudden there's... Look, 13 guys shot a 680 or better.
Right.
And yeah, and three over 690. So
the other thing that you see is that you'll see some names that you wouldn't necessarily see unless it were an Olympic cycle, such as the return of folks like Riau Salsabila of Indonesia, you know, who was originally Mr. Ega Agata. And I think that, you know, he kind of rears up every 4 years and does really well. And here he is. He's 12th in the qualifying round that took place in Shanghai with a big score of 680. Brady also managed a 680 at this particular event.
Yeah, look what the cut line was, 657.
Yeah.
You're not bringing any weak 640 stuff into this game anymore. Like that goes home. So
and some notable shooters did not make the cut. You know, Ryan Tyack of Australia, Michele Frangilli of Italy, who's still going at it. One of the members of the Japanese Olympic team, Mr. Nakanishi, he didn't make the cut line. There's a, you know, just go through the list. You'll find a few names of people that you would have expected to have done.
I'm looking, and 640 is 101st place out of 115.
That tells you everything. Well, it tells you a lot, you know. I mean, these scores. I mean, look at Steve Weiler with a 670, 30th place, right? JC Valadon, Meta had a rough tournament for Meta's standards. He was 33rd with a 669. A lot of folks would be happy with a 669, but not if you're Meta Gudzos. He'd probably expect to have done at least 10 points higher. Nicholas D'Amour of Virgin Islands, right? He's all the way down there in 36th.
I just pulled it up. 2019, a 640 was 69th place.
Took a little bit of a rough time.
68th place.
For the other American guys, Jack Williams was 40th, and Jackson Mirich was 42nd. You know, Takahara Furukawa was 47th. So, you know, I think he had a rough start. 326 to start, which for him, I mean, you know, that's not what he would expect. Picked up 10 points on the second half. But yeah, I think it was a rainy event for the finals, by the way. Didn't seem to affect too much. Of course, you got, you know, a different venue for the finals in Shanghai than the qualifying round. You're more exposed in the finals, so that can affect things. For the recurve women, after 72 arrows, you had the person who ended up winning the thing, Lim Si-hyun, pretty well dominating. And then the French are showing a little bit of moxie here. You had Lisa Barbalan of France second, but you're looking at a 5-point difference between her and Ms. Lim. And then Katharina Bauer of Germany with a 677. Casey was fifth with a 675. So if you look at the, except for Lim Si-hyun, if you look at the top 10 women, call it top five women, between Casey and Lisa, you're looking at 3 points. So, you know, Casey's in there. She's real close. Not so bad. Michelle Kroppen was 11th from Germany. Satsuki Noda from Japan was 12th. Let's see, you had a couple of other outstanding shooters from Europe mostly doing really well. But generally speaking, if you weren't shooting pretty well into the 340s, you weren't going to come anywhere near what Lim was doing, 340 and a 343 for a 683. And I suppose that it bears mentioning that a 683 among the men would have gotten you in ninth place. So it's a top 10 score from Lim Si-hyun if you put her in amongst the men, you know.
I'm doing a little bit of analysis of previous Olympic year scores. Obviously, conditions are not the same from one to the other, but the, like, for instance, 2016 Shanghai World Cup. So this is an Olympic year, first World Cup of the year. Brady shot a 697. This year, Kim Woo-jin shoots a 699. So top score is pretty similar.
Yeah.
640 this year, I said, was what, 101 or something like that? And back then it was 92. So pretty similar numbers there. And then you go and you look at 2019, non-World Cup year. Top score is 688, so that's a little bit off. A 640 was 68th place. So pretty interesting how it ramps up when it matters a whole lot more.
Absolutely. You know, the fact you're doing stats reminds me, I'm really happy to have Braden Gallantine back on board Team Easton because...
And Team Hoyt.
And Team Hoyt. Nobody does better sabermetrics than Gallantine.
He comes with his homework prepped.
He does, yeah. So we're looking forward to having him back on the podcast soon. We'll have to organize our annual... Our
as soon as the FQT's done, let's do our quadrennial...
Olympic analysis.
Yeah, and predictions.
Yes, and we'll get Braden in on that. And
maybe we could do like some type of a fantasy selection where you say you pick your top eight, and then, you know, if you pick, say, Brady number one, and he wins gold, you get like, you know, 100 points or something. I could break this out. Break this out. So if you're a place off, let's say you pick Brady number one and he took third, you'd still get points for that, right? Like, all right. But if you pick Brady number one and he takes ninth, 0 points. So we could do this, put together a little something, maybe even get it open to users, listeners.
Oh, there's a thought.
I don't know how.
I like that thought.
We could figure it out.
Going to be busy times this upcoming month, man. We've got a lot going on. You know, obviously we've got the European Championships taking place this upcoming week. There's the Gator Cup taking place in Florida. You've got Reading coming up this week. Collegiate Nationals here in the U.S. World Cup in Korea. I'll be headed there with Tyson from Easton. And then we're headed to Japan after that. Then SoCal Showdown. Pretty much I get back from Japan and head straight to SoCal. And then we've got, you know, goodness knows there's a whole lot more on the list. But as we wind down the days toward Paris and the pressure ramps up for some countries to try to get those team slots, some of these preliminary events, European Championships, come to mind. That's the last chance for the European teams to be able to get their slots without having to go to the FQT. So I think that's going to be a highly competitive event.
Lots happening. Lots of archery taking place.
All around the world.
Yeah, and, I'm going to try to pay attention to it.
Well, okay. I'm glad you are.